Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Now is the chance to use reliable energy to grow your money with the Dominion Energy Reliability Investment. Our new investment product offers competitive returns, no maintenance fees, and flexible online access to your money. Make the reliable investment in reliable energy. The Dominion Energy Reliability Investment. To find out more, go online to reliabilityinvestment.com. That's reliabilityinvestment.com.
Ese último McNugget me toca a mí porque soy la mayor.
¿Y eso qué tiene que ver?
Los mayores se respetan.
Eso no existe, ¿cierto, mamá?
Ya, quédense tranquilas. Aquí hay otra cajita de McNuggets.
Respeto, ¿viste?
No hay rivalidad cuando hay McNuggets deal.
Hay un deal para cada salida familiar en McDonald's. Compra uno de tus favoritos, como unos McNuggets de 10 piezas, una Big Mac, una Quarter Pounder with Cheese o un Filet-O-Fish y te llevas otro por $1. Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. Válido para un producto de igual o menor valor.
And welcome to the first episode of the new Day Tripper show, The Tactics Board. For those of you that have followed us for a while, you'll know that this is probably something that's quite different for us. We're going to have lots of new exciting shows and content coming over the next few months, and this is just the first one of them. So, as always, be kind to us, send us your feedback, let us know what you think. But as I say, there's a lot more to come from us. So what I want to do now, just give you a quick mention to our sponsor, our friends down at Jan Janssen IPTV. If you're into your sport, your TV shows, obviously there's loads of rises in the prices of TV now. So Jan can sort you out with all your TV needs for a really competitive price. So if you want to follow him at IPTV for all and use the code LFC. DT, you'll get 20% off your first order. So enough from our sponsor. What I want to do now is invite you to see who tonight's guests are. So tonight's guest, you've obviously got myself, Jamie Holm. We're also pleased to be joined by ex-Nottingham Forest, Leicester, and England under 21 left back, Alan Rogers. Alan has since made the move into coaching. In 2011, and has spent time with Tranmere, Sligo, Burnley. Next up, we have Danny Ventry. So the Irish that will be watching us tonight will know Danny well. He made 200 appearances, or nearly 200 appearances, for Sligo, where he won five trophies and made the Ireland All-Stars team and is now a UEFA A-qualified coach. And finally, we have a fellow day tripper and one of the original day trippers, Stephen Brown, joining from the magic of Skype. So, all being well, you'll be able to see the lads now. How are we, gents?
Hello, mate. You all right?
Not too bad. How are you all getting on?
Sound good.
Thanks for joining us, Al. Do you want to talk us through your wins this week, mate? How have you got on? Has it been a good or a bad week?
Started about brilliant, mate. Tuesday, Wednesday, really good. Thursday, give a bit back. Had a bit of a disaster today, but just got a lot back then on John S. at Dundalk.
Oh, so you're in flying form now then?
I am now, yeah.
Okay. Good man, do us a favour, Al. Just pull your camera down slightly there, mate, so we can see your face a little bit more. Actually, Al, will you leave the camera up there, mate? It was better the other way.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. Perfect, mate. So, yeah, I guess before we dive into tonight's show, obviously this is a new show for the Day Trippers. We want to take a look at the upcoming game tomorrow, the opposition, and then spend a little bit more time on Liverpool. But I think we'd be doing ourselves a disservice if we didn't talk about today's Champions League draw. Probably didn't go as how many of us other than Steve, who predicted it perfectly, thought it would. So on that, Steve, I'll come to you first, mate. What was your reactions to the draw?
There was no reaction. It was to be expected. The last side we wanted was City. Then again, we're the only side to beat City in the league this season. The only side to really pull City apart. Like, we look back to the 4-3 match. Never a 4-3 game. Guardiola was on the sideline. I was at the match. Guardiola was on the sideline. I didn't know what to be doing. He didn't have an answer for 20 minutes. As I've said all along, Jay, we can take a game away from any side with those 20 minutes. You're going to be two entertaining games. It's probably the highest quality quarterfinal in it anyway. It is the tide around. Bring it on. That's genuinely bring it on.
Good man, I like it. Danny, what did you think, mate? Who were you hoping for, first of all, and then what was your reaction?
I was hoping for a Sevilla or a Roma, to be honest. I think they're one of the weakest two sides in the round. Like Stephen said, I was at the Liverpool City game. In fact, I missed the first goal because I was late getting in, and I missed the last two goals because I got off 2 minutes early. Liverpool got nothing to fear going into that game. As you said, we beat them at home, and to be fair, I think the first leg, with it being at Anfield, I know people want the second leg at Anfield for the big push, what's happened in previous years, but I think with it being at home and the way we have got results against them recently, I think it'll benefit us. That's just my take on it.
What about you, Al? What was your first thought?
I think it's the worst side we could have got, I'm being honest with you.
Yeah.
You look at the games we played against in the season, and you know, the 5-0 one, I thought Liverpool were well in the game early on until the sending off. You know, in the home game, yeah, Liverpool dominated it, but towards the end, we were hanging on. That's a fact, we were hanging on, and they could have nicked the draw late on.
I agree. I think one thing, and to be honest, I mean, from my side, yeah, it wasn't an ideal draw. I don't think. I'm not fearful of City, and I think the lads have touched on a couple of good points there. I think stylistically, I think we're set up quite well to match them. And I think what you said there, Al, you know, before, if you look at the Mane sending off in the first game, before that sending off, we must have carved them open about three or four times. So I definitely think there's chances there for us. And I think to touch on the point there about us getting a little bit nervous towards the end of the game at Anfield, I think now that we've got Virgil van Dijk, if you look at the type of goals that we conceded towards the end of that game, we lacked a presence. And, you know, yourself as a defender, you can probably see the calmness that he brings across the back four.
Yeah, he's going to be... I don't even think we've seen the best of him. And I've been mightily impressed with what I've seen of him so far. He is a calm man of winters, and he seems to be a bit of a leader, and you can see him dominating plays around him. So I do think he's going to be phenomenal for Liverpool. I just think, you know, I look at this Man City team now, and the danger from all over the place and over two legs. I don't like to say it. I just think I'm not too sure that we can beat them over two legs. Is my honest opinion. I would have loved to see us get Real Madrid. I don't think Real Madrid has been able to live with us. You know, I think we'd have contained their attack and threat to Real Madrid. And there's not a chance Real Madrid could have contained the front three of Liverpool's. I was open for Real Madrid, to be honest.
Yeah, I think one thing that's kind of suits us in particularly in knockout stages is that teams have got to come out a little bit. And I think that's where, with City in particular, because they attack so much, it leaves them open to the counter. And I think that's why this game, you know, over the two legs, you could be looking at something silly like a 5-5, because there's just goals all over the place. And Danny, just to come to you, do you think, you know, as we get to the latter stages now, with it being City, do you think... as much as to be said for home and away, an advantage. You know, a lot of fans are saying that they would have liked to have had Anfield in the second leg. Do you think that carries much weight in this game?
For me, I went back on what I said before, is in previous rounds it has done. It's benefited Liverpool. You know, the likes of the Chelsea games down the years, that's where it's been good for us. But I don't know. As I said, I went to the game at City and I thought we pressed well from the front. Now, they do take chances at the back, in particular John Stones.
Hmm.
He leaves short passes now and again at times. And the way our front three press and the midfield back up behind them, if they're going to play like that early on at Anfield, and it goes the way it did go, I think we could get the tie done in the first leg. That's me being optimistic, being a Liverpool fan, but it could be one of them nights again.
We're optimists here, mate. That's good. I like it. It's good.
That's what Alan said. I think it was their first goal, Sane at Anfield, where
Karius's hands were made of chocolate.
Yeah, the pass was over Arnold's head.
Hmm.
Did he go for the head and missed it? Sane brought it down and weaved through and scored.
Yeah, I think it was Gomez. Yeah, he misjudged it.
Gomez or Arnold, was it?
Yeah, Gomez, I think, mate.
On the touchline, the ball, he misjudged it, went over his head.
Yeah. I didn't know which one it was between them two. So, I don't know. They're both two young lads laying on the trade, but I think it's a great draw.
Yeah, and this is the thing, I don't want to spend too much time on it. We'll move on to Watford now, but I think from our side, we were always going to play top sides. That's what we want to be involved in. Yeah, it's not ideal. And I think from my side, it's more that I would have liked one of the European giants, a proper away day, rather than, you know, the short trip to Manchester. I'll come to you to finish, Steve, being the optimist here. What if you're going to make an early prediction over the two legs, mate, what are you going to go with?
As the lad said, like, we could take that game away from City in the first leg. In 20 minutes of the first leg, we could just wipe that game away. The way City play, we'll press them high. A lot depends on the teams that both sides are going to put out. City have United on the Saturday, which could wrap up the league. We have the Derby on the Sunday, which is crazy.
I think it's been moved to the Saturday now, has it? 12 o'clock kickoff?
Yeah,
it's going to definitely
move. We moved to our 12 kickoff Saturday, Liverpool.
Saturday now.
That's going to make a big difference. But it all depends on the teams put out. Klopp has the best record of any manager against Guardiola. It's fascinating. It really is. It's not a game where you can go, oh, we should. Like, it's not Roma or Sevilla where we're going in as favourites. And we've seen the other night that having home advantage second leg isn't all it's made up to be. You know, you didn't have to approach the game after the first leg. Whereas we'll have Anfield rocking on the Wednesday night. Put the fucking shits up, City. They're not going to experience that. It's the myth of Anfield on a European night is different to anywhere. Like, anyone that's been to Anfield on a European night will tell you that.
Yeah, I remember the Chelsea game. The cameras were actually shaking at the ground. Yeah. The noise was
I was in the cop that night, and it genuinely felt like it was bouncing.
Yeah,
my brother got
my ticket. I was absolutely devastated. But fair play to him. He said it was the best thing that he's ever been involved in. The fans were in early, generating an atmosphere. And I think this is probably one of the biggest European ties probably since then. So I've got, you know, other than the Dortmund game, and you can see the power of Anfield when it's rocking. Right, what I want to do, lads, I want to move on to Watford a little bit, because I'd say the City game in itself is probably a separate podcast. So if we look to tomorrow, I mean, I had a little bit of a look at, I suppose, Watford, how they've been doing, and they're a strange team to kind of analyse, because they're very Jekyll and Hyde, and it's probably why they're sort of mid-table. You know, we're probably seeing now that you've got the top four, top six teams who are in a league of their own. One thing that I did notice since the new managers come in, you know, they've changed the shape. They've got some good results. Three wins in the last five is a real upturn for them. One thing that would be good news for us is that they haven't won an away game for the last eight. So, you know, the omens are looking good there, and they've got a few injuries. But I wanted to sort of bring it to the lads, because I know myself having had new managers sort of come and go, you know, particularly sort of in non-league, you know, you don't have managers sort of stay that long and they tend to bring in their own players. So I sort of wanted to bring this to Danny and to Al first in terms of with new managers, you know, they look to try and implement new ideas. I know under Marco Silva, they'd been playing a 3-5-2 and they'd sort of shifted. They've shifted now to a 4-2-3-1. How long, in your experience, lads, does it usually take for managers to start to get their ideas across and for the team to start, I guess, reflecting their philosophies, you know, beyond the initial bump of, look, we want to impress the new manager? When do the ideas start to come through in the style of play?
I'll let you go, Danny. You've had more managers sacked than me with your performances.
Not enough, yeah. Anyway, so that'll do. It depends on the players, the manager for me. If a manager comes in, and I think he's got to get experience, lads, on the sides early on. I've had a manager before where he's come in and that's upset experienced players in the changing room, and they have a big effect. But if you get them on sides early doors, they can relay the messages that he's after and apply that on the pitch. Now, that could come within a week or two. But as you say, if he brings in his own players, you know, new surroundings, new players, new teammates to get to know, that could take, you know, as long as 2, 3, 4 months. And by that time, a lot of the portion of the season's gone. And to decide where you end up in the league. But what I'd like is, if I was to have another new manager, you know, not changed drastically from what they used to, or like they might be getting bad results and something has got to change. But if you change a lot in a short space of time, I think you're just asking for the trouble, mate.
And what about you, Al? I'd say over the course of your career, you've come across many, many new managers. What have been the sort of, I guess, the biggest things you've learned as a player when new managers come in? You know, what have been the pitfalls that they fell into and what's worked well?
I've had a few, to be fair. It's particularly the time I spent at Forest when we went from Dave Bassett and come into Ron Atkinson, and you know, Big Ron was proper old school, and he just kind of he was a character. He, you know, he was a big personality, and he kind of rubbed off, and it was enjoyable. He didn't try and be too clever and too much. He just turned training into more enjoyable. You know, and it kind of worked because we never won a game. It was in the Premier League before us. We never won a game in about 19, and then we beat Everton away at Goodison. In one of his first, I think it was his first game actually. We beat Everton away at Goodison. But then on the flip side, I've had Gary Megson who come in at Forest, and he come in and he was a joke. He just come in with this bravado where I'm the main man, and you know, threw all of his experienced players out of the way, and it backfired on him. And he got relegated, and nearly got relegated again the following season. And got the sack. So it depends how you come in. You know, you look at Watford. You know, we're talking about Watford on Saturday. They changed the manager and they have changed the formation, but the personnel it's still the same. You know, so it's not as if he's coming in, he's making 7 or 8 or 9 changes from the personnel. So all he's doing, he's coming in and he's tinkering with the formation, which if it's only the formation you're working at, you know, players can adapt to that in a week or 2 weeks in, you know, on training ground work.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if we look at Watford, you know, as a shape, I think, you know, I've pulled up on the graphic there a couple of players to watch. I think from my sort of limited experience, you know, in those first couple of weeks, you don't want to rock the boat. You want to try and solidify. Yeah. You don't want to start losing games. If you can start nicking points and getting points on the board, it gets the players, you know, on buying into what the manager's trying to achieve. And I think with Watford, when you look at their 11, the foundation that they have with Kapuwe, you know, and Decore, they're two monsters of midfielders, and having them both sat shielding in front of the back four. Look, if you're going away to the top six, you're always going to struggle. If you can nick something, even better. But they've been turning in good performances against the teams that they'd be hoping to beat. And I suppose as a manager, if you've got that protection, you're always in with a shout of winning a game.
Yeah, no, you are. Do you want to go, Steve?
Yeah, looking at the two lads, as Jamie said there, Decore has looked like a revelation for Watford this season. They have missed Shabala, or Nathan Shabala, is that his name? Is that how you say it? Yeah, he's a very good player. Very impressive in the games that I've seen so far this season. But Kapu is a quality footballer when he's given time and space, as any Premiership footballer really is. But Decore is an interesting one. He's a player I'd like to look at. I think you could put him in the best of the rest of the Premiership. Between himself and Ndidi from Leicester in that position. There's not many better players outside the top six than the two lads anyway.
And Danny, I'll come to you because I think now, you know, you look at Pep in particular. You know, he's got systems on the ball, off the ball. He's constantly tweaking and changing. And this is something that I've been thinking of late. Do you think a lot is made of, you know, the formations at the start of the game? Because there's so many different systems, as I said, that you can have when the ball's in a certain part of the pitch. You know, when you lads have been doing your badges, for example, would you be having different systems for various different parts on the pitch? Let's say the ball's in on the right-hand side, you'll have a particular shape. Do you think there's a bit too much made on now in terms of the starting positions of the players?
In the starting positions, maybe, yes, because I think the quality of the players they've got, you could end up anywhere, any area in the field, and, you know, and can make things happen. I was at the Wigan Man City game. Now, I know it's an FA Cup game, it's different, and it's on the night and stuff. But De Bruyne had come on, and I watched him for the time he was on. He weren't on long, but every player just tried to give him the ball. He just hung out on the left wing, but then within 10 seconds, 12 seconds, he'd be on the right-hand side, entering the box from that side. So I think you've seen Pep with the inverted fullbacks as well, where they come in front of the two centre-halves and then the two kind of wingers dropped into fullbacks, and a lot of the rotation. So you've got quality team, quality players. They can all handle the ball. I think, as you say, the starting positions of them, all right, it gives you a brief idea where they may be for the majority of the game, but you know, the movements of them is unbelievable at times, and that's how they get out. You see the short corners they even do. I think when they played Burnley in one of the games, they done every corner was short because they knew they stuck in the box. They weren't going to win a header.
Yeah, and they back themselves when in possession. You look at David Silva, for example. Tight areas can recycle the ball, and that's what I suppose when you're the likes of a Watford and you're coming away to a City, you're coming away to an Anfield. You know, it's such a big task for them because, you know, when you watch the lads live, particularly Liverpool, you know, we set traps all over the pitch for teams. Yeah. We bait them forward, and then once they, you know, they the pressure maybe gets them, it's a misplaced pass, you know, a yard left, yard right, and we're away, and it's the red arrows, you know. And
he started all off for me. Firmino was work rate off the ball. He closes down from behind midfielders and nicks it that way, and a new ball break, and it's kind of like Rush, what he used to do. He used to drop in and nick the ball.
Yeah, for the player, you can see why he's so popular amongst the team. You know, because when he's on song, he does so much work. And as you can see, the players that move off the back of him, you know, they're all so well drilled. And just to sort of bring it back to Watford a little bit, I was kind of having a look, particularly off the back, and I don't want to spend too much time, I suppose, on the United game. I think it's been done to death, but I do think there's going to be potentially some parallels between potentially how Watford could look to exploit Liverpool tomorrow. And Steve, I'll come to you on this one because you've been quite vocal in your praise for Richarlison. You know, he's really starting to light the Premier League up, and he looks to try and do a little bit of damage from the left, doesn't he?
Yeah, like it says on the graphic there that he's playing as a 10, but it's actually Pereira that drops in as a 10. Richarlison plays mainly from the left. From what I've seen at Watford anyway, I'm not going to claim to seeing every single game, but from what I've seen, he attacks, he comes deep from the left. He's surprisingly physical, which for a young Brazilian lad, you're coming into the Premiership in your first season, you don't expect him to be physical. He scored a surprising amount of headed goals. He gets a lot of headed chances coming in and putting his head in places where you're not expecting. Like, he gets a lot of kicks in the head, surprisingly, coming in at the back stick. He's tidy, he's nice, he's tidy, he's fast. He'd be a worry. He's going to look to play off Deeney. I don't see Watford coming out. I see Watford playing a similar game plan to United played last Saturday.
Yeah.
they're going to want to hit Deeney early, if it is Deeney or Akaka. Hit whoever it is up early and get Richarlison, Perea around them. That's how we're going to, and it is going to be interesting whoever does start right back for us tomorrow.
Well,
they're going to have to keep an eye on Richarlison drifting in, because that's what he wants to play. What's what he wants to do? He wants to get on the second ball while drifting.
And you're right. It's funny you say that, because I was having a look over the last couple of days at sort of the influence that the players have been having in the last few games. And if you look at the graphic that's on the screen now, you can see that Richarlison pulls into that wide left area. And I've read a piece on Football Whispers today, Sam Maguire, who said that he's actually got, he wins more aerial duels than Lukaku. So if you're looking at United, for example, the game at the weekend, it was a clear tactic from Mourinho to probably beat our press, go long, go direct, and probably try and hit the channel between Lovren and Trent Alexander-Arnold. So that I can see that being a worry or a plan of theirs tomorrow. And I want to kind of come to you on this, Al, as a defender. And again, I don't want to harp, too much on the United game, but if we were to see something, on the screen now, if we look at the shape, the basic shape of the game against United, from your experience, what would you want to see? If Watford start doing this tomorrow, you can see Lovren's engaged with Lukaku. I've got my thoughts, but it's not about me. I want to get your thoughts on sort of where you feel the players should be here in the graphic on the screen.
I can't see the graphic on the screen.
Is it?
Have you got it up?
Yeah, is the graphic? Can you see the graphic there, lads?
I can't, no.
No.
Yeah. It's not on Sky, Jay. It's not coming up on our screen. It's coming up for the Periscope.
Okay, no problem. So if you think then, Al, Lukaku's dropped off a little bit from the back four. Is the question, does Lovren go and engage him? Does he follow that run? What would you want your defenders to do there? Or would you want the midfield to take him off, off his place?
First and foremost, you can see that Mourinho targeted the Liverpool right-hand side. It's as clear as day like that. Hmm. And, I think you could clearly see as well, I'll have to go get my charge in a minute, lads. My lad's been on my iPad, I've only got 5%.
No,
you
problem.
Can clearly see, that Lukaku was just targeting himself on Lovren at all times.
Hmm.
Now, and I thought too much was made of Trent Arnold as well, because he's a young kid learning the game, but you can also see his defensive side of the game is not there yet. Hmm. Because as soon as your centre half's going to go up to challenge the centre forward, as a fullback, you automatically took yourself right the way round. Just defend the what ifs.
Yeah.
What if you lose the ball? And really, if Lovren loses the ball, which he did, Trent Arnold should be tucked around a little bit. So he should be just sweeping that up. So he flicks it on. Trent Arnold looks a play, brings it down, and clears the ball.
Hmm.
I personally don't think Trent Arnold is an out and out fullback yet. He's got everything in the making to be one, but his defensive side of the game isn't there. He's got other qualities. And I've got no doubt about it tomorrow that Watford will target the same. I don't think Liverpool will play the same personnel.
We'll come on to that in a minute, because we've all picked our 11s for tomorrow, and I don't think that one of the sides is the same. So,
Just going back to that, I do think Watford, because this Richarlison is phenomenal in the air. He really is, for the size. I think Steve just said then, the amount of aerial duels he wins is phenomenal.
Mm.
So they will target Liverpool's right-hand side tomorrow. That is no shadow of a doubt about that.
Mm.
I remember watching him against Chelsea.
Give me 2 minutes while I get a charger.
No problem, mate.
We obviously get the live 3 o'clock kickoffs. Remember, towards the start of the season, he was playing against Chelsea. And Moses basically just tried to kick him out of the game. All he done was try and kick him out of the game.
Mm.
And he stood up to everything that they threw at him and then still went and scored. I think he scored twice that day.
Yeah.
I think they were beaten 4-2 or something along them lines anyway. But he's a serious danger tomorrow as well.
Mm. And I think you touched on it before, Steve, in terms of where the personnel, which players are going to occupy which space. And I get the sense with the three behind the one, in behind Deeney, there's a lot of movement there. So we'll have to be, the lads in defensive midfield, whether it's Henderson, Chan, there's going to be a lot of communication from the back four just to make sure that we're tracking those runners.
Yeah, Perez, like the lad Perez is a good player. Like, he was playing with Juventus, he signed from Juventus, so he's no fucking mug, like, you know what I mean? But he is, he's Uruguayan international, he's tidy, as you'd expect from a South American footballer. But
I think the players off them, like you're saying, the players off the runs off
what he's going
to win. You like this, do you?
Yeah, that's what it's all about. As I said, it depends whether it is, Deeney. Like, we've seen the first game of the season, the problems that Akaka caused us. Now, obviously, it was under Marcus Silva, and as you said, Jay, it was a 3-5-2, so it was completely different formation. But Akaka's a very good... He's not great, but he's big, physical, similar build to Lukaku. He's not as good, obviously, as Lukaku. But it's basically it's the same challenge a week later.
Yeah,
and I think what I thought was impressive or clever from Lukaku, and clearly a tactic, was to stay away from Van Dijk. You know, Van Dijk can't follow him over there. You know, he just went and stood on Lovren every single time. But I just think it's a case of a little bit of communication and a little bit of nous. You know, Danny, you're a midfielder. If you can drop in there, your centre back tells you, look, do me a favour, sit on his toes. You know, any of the bits here, just get touch tight. Don't let him get away. Make sure that we're getting the bits. I'll put enough pressure on him from behind so he's not getting a clear control of the ball, and then you're in, you're recycling the ball, and we're away.
Exactly. I've done it many times before. What I was going to say to you is, back in midfield, the sitter on his toes. Let him try and have a little challenge with him. Drop off.
Hmm.
He might just flick one onto your chest. You bring it down, and you know, as Alan said, you recycle the ball. You run the ball back. Put your full backs and players around. You've got to track them runners.
Exactly.
But for me, going off the clip you've got on Periscope there is, for me, Virgil van Dijk should be organising a little bit more.
That line is horrific, isn't it? Looking at it from the screenshot, the line is fucking horrendous. From a goal kick.
Sitting there, like, they're in between, they're doing neither or. So, I think it's Chan, was it, on the day? Just go and stand on his toes.
Yeah, Chan and Chamberlain.
I had a big issue with that. I know we don't want to get back into United, but I had a massive... Chan got away with fucking murder last Saturday. If I'm playing centre half, I want my holding midfielder to come and stand in front of him, and then I can drop 10 yards.
Exactly. You can always go and attack the ball if it's played in short. But, you know,
exactly.
His position to begin with was all wrong, and it was right throughout the game.
Yeah.
Hopefully they've learned lessons now for tomorrow. The elite players. Can Virgil not go and do Lukaku? As you say to Lovren, look, you go and stand there, you go and play left centre half.
Yeah.
I'll sort it out. The elite players, purely playing on the left or right, will mean nothing to them.
But you know what's funny, Danny? And whilst I agree, I was listening to another podcast the other day, and they made a great point. It was the lads on tour, and they said Lovren backs himself. You know, he's played against Lukaku many a time, you know, particularly against the Blues, and even against United. You know, United, he's dominated Lukaku. So one-on-one, you know, you can't blame the guy for saying to himself, do you know what, no, I'm going to do this here. And I think, you know, you're always going to lose headers. We've all lost headers. It happens. Sometimes someone just gets up a little bit quicker and you can't get to the ball. And that's where, for me, the focus should be more on the players around him. You know, Al touched on Trent before. I don't think he's a naturally defensive-minded right back. So maybe his focus wasn't on, okay, I can see from Lukaku's jump he's going to get ahead. I'm just going to start backtracking now. Maybe he's not that, you know, wired that way. And then you can see Van Dijk there. He's got to be able to anticipate that Lukaku's got the jump on there and start to make tracks.
That's why Chan's getting away with murder, Jamie. Because if Chan is standing in front of Lukaku, Lovren drops and there's no gap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Flicks it on to you and you're putting it down.
Flicks it on, Lovren takes it down and it's away we go again.
Right, the last thing I want... Do you see that Al there said that
I'm done.
He said he wanted to get a charger and he comes back with a pint of Guinness. Did anyone notice that?
My charge.
Right, so I don't want to... one final thing I want to just touch on just with Watford before we move on to Liverpool. One thing that Liverpool have notoriously struggled with, I guess, when teams come to Anfield, not so much this season, which I'm pleased to say, is teams that have that sort of double pivot, two players that are sat in front of, you know, the back four. What would you say, Danny? You know, what would be the best way? Or, and I'll bring you in as well, Al. What would be the best way to disrupt those two players that are intent on sitting in front of the back four? How would you go about if you were a manager trying to move them around and create spaces?
I think tomorrow Liverpool may go with a three in midfield, but a one sitting and a two occupying them two. Now Henderson will start feeding the players in front of him if I think he's playing.
I'll bring your team up on the screen now, Danny Seans, as you jump into it, mate. So talk us through it.
So yeah, so like I'm saying, I think Henderson be the one sitting.
Yeah.
Maybe doing it the toes of just like we were talking about before. And then off that, feeding the balls. He's got a good range of passing now, Henderson. He's got better as his career's gone on at Liverpool. So I think my team is Oxlade-Chamberlain and Chan in front of him. Mm. Is that correct? Yeah.
I think you changed yours last minute, mate, and you had Chan and Wijnaldum.
No, that wasn't me.
Was that not you? Blame me. That's me putting the wrong one up. We were doing well without any technical difficulties there.
But that wasn't me, so don't blame me on that one. So I think the movement of Oxlade-Chamberlain and around them too will disrupt them. And I think you've got Salah gives you some width at times, and he attacks from wide positions and comes in narrow. You've got to move the ball from side to side quickly to open space down the sides. Our fullbacks will hopefully get forward and put some decent balls in the box, but I think that's how you get round them two old midfielders for Watford.
And that's why you've gone with Arnold and Robertson to try and stretch the pitch and I guess try and keep it as open as possible.
Exactly, and I think Henderson's range of passing may bring that in. The quicker you move from side to side, more space there is to attack down the sides, and you might see a few balls whipped across the box tomorrow. That's on my opinion. Liverpool don't always play that way, but I think to get round, that's the shape they're going to play. I think that's how you get round.
And just on that, I mean, you touched on Henderson there. He seems such a divisive figure, I suppose, for a lot of Liverpool fans. Me personally, I don't quite understand it. I think he recycles the ball. You know, he moves the ball very quickly. He's got a good range of passing. I think he's growing into the leadership role. From your side, Steve, just to bring you in on Henderson, do you think when he doesn't play, we're starting to notice it more now?
Yeah, we are. We noticed it last Saturday. We don't move the ball quick enough without him. Like, as you said, people have opinions on Henderson, whether he's good enough, whether he's captain material, whatever it may be. But the thing to look at it is, when he plays, it sounds fucking wanky, but his vertical passing, one and two, like what Chan does in four touches, Henderson does in two. If he can do one touch, he does one touch. If he can do two, if he has to take two, he has to take two. But everything's just moved quicker. Everything's just fed into Firmino, fed out wide. Everything has just moved quicker. And it moves teams around quicker as well. He has that ball, the Henderson ball, where it comes to him, and it's a whip diagonal ball over the between the centre-back and the full-back, and it just works perfectly. It's just his ball. But it's the fact that he moves the ball quicker. That's... I think we lose so much without him there. We've seen it last Saturday where we didn't move the ball quick enough at all. And that was the whole game. We were slow, ponderous with Henderson there. And he's not forcing it because he has the ability to do it. So it's not that he's sent him a feel like he's trying to force all the time.
Yeah, and I think that sort of ties in nicely to what Danny was saying. You know, if you've got these two centre midfielders for Watford who are sat in front of a back four and you need to try and move them around, as you said there, Henderson's doing things in two touches where Chan's doing it in four. If we want to try and move players around, we've got to do it quickly. We've got to try and disrupt their shape. And I think particularly against United last week, and I keep going back to that, but I think there will be some parallels. You know, they did sit quite deep. You know, when you look at that game, I think they kind of, I think they kind of got back into a situation where they kept us very narrow. I'm going to just pull up a graphic here just of the game itself. And you can see how narrow we were when we played. You know, if you look there, you can see that it's very congested in the middle of the park. And, you know, for all the ball that we had against United, you know, we didn't really create many clear-cut chances. So what I want to kind of throw to you is, do you think from the game last week, is that a bit of a blueprint in how to try to beat this Liverpool side?
I think it is. We nullified them. I wouldn't say midfield, but they got players in and out where the areas Salah comes into, Mane comes into. And I think with the Valencia and Young options, they have a fullback. They're two very good fullbacks for me.
Valencia and Young were playing as nearly centre halves. They were tucked in so narrow that they were playing as centre half. Well, they were playing 5 yards rather than the
attack and instinct. And then the pace of Rashford, you know, pulled our fullbacks back a little bit more. No, so is it the blueprint to beat Liverpool? I don't know. It could have been an off day for us, which, well, it was.
We hope.
Yeah. We hope. As other teams done it in the past, Now, what Watford might bring into the game tomorrow, so now we know what we're up against, which, you know, at home, you know, we're very strong at home, so I hope we see Liverpool winning comfortably tomorrow, man.
I love the optimism. Steve, coming to you, mate. Your 11 that you sort of went with, you opted for Gomez in at full tomorrow.
Yeah, purely because of what we talked about already, that they are, Deeney is going to pull left. He's going to try and get Richarlison involved, who will try and win his own headers as well. He's not Mata. He's not going to stand and wait for a knockdown. Look, he will try and win his own headers. Gomez, I think, is pretty obvious. Like, he's 6'3", whatever size he is. He's bigger than Alexander Arnold.
Yeah.
Ideally, trying to be back, but hopefully he's back for the Champions League. Actually, that's something that we didn't speak about. But if Gomez is, I prefer Gomez tomorrow purely for the physical side of the game. I think, as you see from my team, I think Mata plays for passing again, for his passing into midfield and bypassing midfield with his ball, with passes along the deck, which Lovren's very good on the ball, but all he wants to do is play a Hollywood pass 60 yards over fullback's head. Whereas Matip actually actively looks to get involved, carries the ball forward, doesn't carry the ball into midfield, but will carry the ball further forward and then look for a pass.
Yeah, and I think from my side, I like Trent at fullback. I definitely prefer him going forward. But I think, you know, touched on the things, you know, in terms of the long balls. Richarlison coming from the left, being strong in the air. I'd echo those sentiments in terms of Gomez. Just take Trent out of the firing line. For a couple of games after the United game. And I'll come to you, Al. You've joined us again, mate. Where did you go there?
No worries.
We were just talking about, I guess, the Liverpool lineup tomorrow, and particularly the back four. Who would your back four be?
I think I had. Did I have Trent?
You did, mate.
Sure, I think I had Trent right back, and I'd like to see Gomez be given a chance at centre half, mate.
Yeah, that was the controversial one, that you'd play Big Joe at right centre back alongside Van Dijk.
I would, yeah. I think he's very good in the air, Gomez. He's quick.
Oh, he's gone.
he lost us again. That internet's not working too well there, is it?
Trent and Lovren there, I think they'd learn from last week. I know you said they're going out the fire line, but I keep them in there.
It is going to look harsh on Trent tomorrow if he does get dropped for Gomez, whoever it may be.
Maybe it is going to look harsh. That's what I'm thinking.
The only thing is that it's not going to come as any rotation tomorrow isn't going to come as a surprise, because Klopp has rotated so much this season.
And I think that's one of the things that's pleased me the most, I suppose, from this year, is that Klopp learns on his feet. He doesn't seem to make the same mistake twice. You know, we burnt out massively last year. You know, transfers are something different. He's his own man there. And, you know, I think he's got his own philosophy. But I think when you look particularly at how he's used his players this year, the rotation policy, as you said, rightly said there, Steve, I don't think it'll come at any great shock. And with the games that we've got coming up, you know, I think managers are now looking in sort of blocks of five games. It's not very much, look, let's see who's fit for the game at the weekend. It's very much planned ahead where players are going to get those rest games. And I think this would be maybe a chance just to give Trent a little bit of a respite, get him out of the public eye. And I think, you know, aside from the defence, you know, one thing that interests me, particularly in these games where teams come to sit deep, is the midfield. Now, my personal opinion would be at home against a team that sits deep, I don't think we need a Henderson and a Chan. You know, there's a lot of people that would try and get both players in the team. I think it's an either-or for me, and based on the fact that Henderson moves the ball a little bit quicker, I'd probably opt for him. What would your thoughts be on that, Danny?
I get what you're saying. Now, I have seen Chan play a little bit further forward when he first comes to Liverpool. So I think he can do a job in that area. I get what you're saying. Hmm. And it looked like it would be a 4-2-1-3. It's just my opinion that I think he could do a job further up the field.
Hmm.
And, you know, if I'm thinking about set pieces as well. He's a big lad, Chan.
Hmm.
I think he might come and play percentage football, play for free kicks, corners. They have got some big players in the team.
Hmm.
You know, you've got them in midfield as well. Richarlison, you've said, Troy Deeney. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, that we could get caught on a set piece. So for me, that's why I've got Chan, Henderson, Van Dijk, and centre half. Lovren again.
Yeah.
You know, that's four decent headers of the ball. All right, Lovren has missed a couple of headers last week in United, but for me, I'm thinking set piece wise as well.
Hmm.
But we can't be vulnerable at set pieces. So, all right, great going forward. Just have a little bit of strength and steel on set pieces as well. That's my reason, my chance in the team.
Yeah.
They've conceded the most amount of set piece goals in the league, haven't they?
Yeah, they've got a really poor record, actually. I see, again, that was shout out to Sam Maguire in his piece today. He was saying that. And it was the same with Arsenal. They'd started quite well against Arsenal. Then they give a sloppy goal away. I think it was Mustafi scored from a corner. And then, you know, your plans are out the window then. One thing I want to bring to you, Danny, just quickly is, you know, when you're doing your coaching courses, you know, and you're putting on sessions, and obviously as your time as a player, let's say, for example, you're Watford. You know, you're going to come up against a very particular type of side in Liverpool. You know, you can't switch off for a second. What would that week look like? You know, what would that week look like? Or what would those sessions look like in the lead up to the game? You know, is it very much sort of phase play where, you know, there'll be different scenarios and the players have got to react based on where the ball is and where the manager expects them to be? What would the training look like in the build up to a big game?
I think, yeah, a lot of shape work within the week. In different areas of the pitch, different scenarios. For a player, it's quite boring. But I think with the level of the Premier League, every point is vital when you're the likes of a club like Watford. You know, how to stifle Salah, Mane, Firmino in the areas where they're going to receive the ball. I think their two midfielders would have a lot of work to do off the ball. They probably play some more industrial players who can get around the pitch, and that might take away from them going forward. But you're coming to an Anfield, remember?
Yeah. So,
you know, all right, they have won the last three games, did you say?
Yeah, three out of the last five.
Yeah, so, you know, you get a point at Anfield, it's a great point. So, for me, I would work on certain areas when, let's say, the ball's with our centre-half.
Hmm.
Where do we want to show them? I'd be looking at the weakest player in the opposition team who is not the greatest on the ball.
Hmm.
Try and pick one of them in the Premier League, which would be a tough job. But for me, it would be Lovren, as you say.
Hmm.
Let Lovren have the ball. Everyone else get tucked in, narrow, tight, get a good shape. You might see two banks of four.
Hmm.
You might see a 4-5. Might even see 4 and 6 behind the ball for Watford tomorrow at times.
Mm.
They're little things you'd look at, and they'd look to exploit the space where our two centre-half split the pool a lot.
Mm.
And straight balls through the centre of the half with a little bit of pace up front.
Mm.
Those trucks at times.
Mm.
Just little things like that. And I'd look at every goal that Liverpool have conceded in the past few weeks and try and replicate for my team. And look, this is where we can hit Liverpool.
Mm.
It will be a tedious week, and you've got to get the players on side to do that. But you know, you come to Anfield and take a point, as a player.
Yeah.
I think that's a great point for Watford. Yeah, that, the week, very tedious, but you know what you're coming for.
And to come to you, Steve, do you think now, just off the back of what Danny was saying there, you know, looking for a trend in the type of goals that we concede, do you think now, obviously with the introduction of Van Dijk, you know, do you think that there's been a shift in the mentality now of the lads? You know, do you think that we're not as susceptible to giving away the same type of goal? Do you think that sort of weak underbelly that we've probably had, you know, thrown at us a few times is now gone?
I don't think it's gone. It's still there. We've seen from the goals we conceded last week were goals. They were harking back to United. The goals that they scored are goals that Watford scored, that Stoke scored, that Leicester scored.
Mm.
They're simple long ball goals. We still have. That's a whole other conversation, James.
Yeah.
Let's be honest about it there. Like, realistically, Van Dijk he's looked top class, and he oozes confidence, and he struts, like he genuinely just struts around the place.
Mm.
He struts around like he owns the pitch,
mm.
Which is what you want from a centre half, but you need another one beside him.
Yeah,
they're weak. Every team has a weak link. It's the old Rafa saying of the duvet, you can't cover everything.
Mm.
You're gonna leave something exposed somewhere.
Yeah.
But we're starting to manage it. With the way the Klopp system, the way we play, the way we set traps, the way we press, we're not as susceptible as we have been.
Hmm.
But there's still tweaks to be made to the system, obviously.
Okay, and Al, now you're back with us, mate. I'll come to you. Just lower the camera just a touch there, mate, just so we can see you, if you don't mind. Thank you, mate. Yeah, just on that, because we've just been talking about leaders, and I think it's underplayed a little bit now, in my personal opinion, you know, the impact that a good leader has on a side. And, you know, you as a fullback, you know, a lot of the time you would have leaders at centre-back instructing not only the people in front of them in terms of shielding, tracking the runners, but also then the fullbacks. You know, some of the players that you've played with, you know, alongside you at centre-back, you know, who have been some of the most influential, and how much support would they give you throughout the game?
Well, actually, your leaders on the pitch are vital, and I played with a centre half of Forest, probably 5'10", Colin Cooper.
Yep.
Wow, I mean, you know, you look at Coops, and you'd think he'd get bullied all around the pitch. He was 5'10", centre half, probably about 11 stone, soaking wet. Unbelievable player.
Hmm.
Unbelievable, just, you know, screaming on the pitch, demanding stuff off you. If you're out of position, he's screaming at you to get your cover on it. You know, I went to Forest for big money at a young age, and you know what, the likes of him, he was an unbelievable help for you, just by, you know, his vocal presence all the time. And as I say, he weren't a physical presence, but no, you know, he won all his aerial battles, he won, and he was just an absolute, he demanded such standards from everyone. He was the club captain. And the year we won the league for us to get back promoted, he was phenomenal as a leader.
Yeah.
He really, really was, and his vocal presence was second to none.
And would you share those sentiments, Danny? You were a captain yourself, you know, across various clubs. First of all, I'd say, you know, what type of captain did you try to be on the pitch? And also, what type of captains did you like to play with on the pitch?
Myself, I probably led by my actions, really. Try and get the players on board. I had a great player in Joseph Endo, who was a lot more experienced and seen a lot more than me, who kind of guided me as a captain.
Hmm.
But I had the armband, yeah, but I think if you've got experienced players around you, I think it helps. Okay, I did try and organise and get lads in shape, or you know what certain lads you need to give a rollicking to.
Yeah.
Or you need some lads, you know, you need the arm around it. And I think I tried to get better at that as I got a little bit older.
Mm.
Alan installed me as captain this year at Skem.
Oh yeah, for those listeners that don't know, Al is the manager of Danny, so they can tell us some stories at the end of the podcast.
Both left Skem, tough club, but we had a lot of young lads there, and it's hard to get into the lads' heads. They've come to academies, they're stuck in academy football, they've come to a club like Skem.
There's no hiding place, is there?
Oh, he's playing against proper men.
Yeah.
Turn into the shell, and then, as I said, I try and lead by actions, and frustration can give you the wrong reaction at times. And for me, who's the best captain I played with? Couldn't really tell you, to be honest with you.
Could they must have been shite then.
Who did we have, Al, when you came to Accrington? I think Peter Cavanagh was a captain.
Yeah, now
he was a young lad. Someone I thought he led by his actions also, weren't very vocal because we had a good set of lads.
And I think what's kind of been thrown at this Liverpool team, which is why I kind of brought it up, I suppose, is their ability to manage games. And I think we're getting a little bit better at this. But, you know, for anyone with half a football brain, you know, sometimes you can feel the game shift away from you. And that's okay. What you need to say to each other is, look, for the next 10 minutes, we just batten down the hatches. We do nothing silly. Let's not try and play the expansive football. Let's just try and shut up shop. And I think, you know, Steve, we've had many a conversation about this, mate. You know, there has been a bit of a shift now, I think, you know, particularly, you know, in European games. You know, you look at the way we managed the Porto away game. You know, that was very cool, composed, calm.
I think there was a bit of a shift, but it's different when you're 3, 4, 5 nil up.
Yeah.
I think too much has to come from the sideline. There's not enough on pitch management. There's not enough thinking for themselves. There's no fucking owl arse in the team. That's a nasty fuck that's gonna just say, right, we're shutting this down.
Yeah.
You know, there's times when you need, like, the two boys obviously be able to tell you better. Like, there are times, like, I played a high enough level. Oh, obviously nowhere near the lads, like, but there's times when you need a lad that's experienced. It's going to just turn around and go, no, we're not going. If your fullbacks are bombing on, you just turn around and go, no, we're just going to see.
Mm.
We'll take 5 minutes out of the game. We'll just kill it off. There's not enough of that on the pitch.
Yeah.
I think there's a lack of that in English football, to be honest with you.
You know, I agree with you, 100% agree with you. It's gone out of the game.
Because my bad team at Wimbledon, if I go take it to the Tottenham game against Juventus, anyone who knows anything about football, Tottenham were miles the better team over them two legs.
Yeah.
Miles the better team. Now, Tottenham went 1-0 up at Wembley and still were plowing forward, trying to get another goal. Now, you look, now for me, that's just, they haven't got the leaders. And I look at Pochettino as well, me there, and just say, you know, that's his experience where they're still going to go against an exceptional Juventus team.
Mm.
Now, if you flip the coin over the other side, Juventus get 2 goals quickly. Centre forward off, defender on, bang. You've got blocks, and Tottenham could still play now.
They wouldn't have scored.
You look back at the Arlas and the leaders, like that. What's his name, the centre half, Chiellini, is it?
Yeah.
He's throwing his head and his face to block shots. Now, I don't think that we've got that in the Premier League or in any of our top flight clubs in England.
I think there's I totally agree. I mean, I'm quite old school in the way that I view the game, and I like the game to be played. And I think now, you know, it's probably going another podcast in itself, but I think there's a lack of physicality in the game now, and it's probably born out of that these type of centre backs can't impose their natural game because it's basically becoming like basketball in a way now. You know, you see players feigning injury all the time, and I think that's brought about a new centre back. So Danny mentioned him before, a John Stones. You know, these ball-playing centre-backs, it seems like there's a shift now and teams want, you know, their centre-backs to play from the back.
Yeah. Well, there is, I mean, you know what, Danny's works in the academy. I've worked in academies for a while, barely in that. And, you know, you get your syllabus of what you're doing and nothing in the academy structure is defended.
Hmm.
There's no sessions where you go, right, what are we doing tonight? It's defended. It's playing out from the back. It's playing through the midfield, it's playing through the wide areas, it's playing through the front men. Mm. These are all the syllabus what you've got to stick to the academy.
Mm.
Now, there's no syllabus where it says, I'm going to take me back four and hammer them for 30 minutes and get them to defend. Because they're more interested in, can he play out from the back?
Mm.
Yeah, he's good at that. Yeah, we'll sign him.
Mm.
Not the fact, can he stick his head in the way? Can he block the tackle?
Yeah.
You know, it's all about let's play him out from the back.
So it's literally a dying art.
I personally think it's dying out.
Mm.
And you see it when you when you get players who go on loan to the lower leagues. You don't understand the physicality of the game and how it affects other teams. You see, that's when some of them struggle. People out on loan now from the likes of Liverpool, they go to a football on side, so they keep the environment similar so they don't get too spooked. You've got to rattle them a little bit and see what they're about. It's funny you should say that because we were having a chat, my nephew's at Liverpool's academy
and we were having a, my brother was having a chat with Alex Inglethorpe, and he said to Alex Inglethorpe, he said, look, obviously the school want him to play what you think's best. And Alex said, let him play for as long as possible. I want him to get used to the horrible pitches. I want him to get used to the non-perfect environment. So when the lads come here, they realise how privileged they are, which I thought was quite a poignant point.
Yeah, I agree. I'm bringing my under-12 to the Pearl City Centre on Sunday morning. Pitches up a hill. It's bobbly. It's wet. It's going to be boggy. But there's kids in there from the centre of Liverpool who are nasty kids. And it's just a testament mentally.
Character building.
Yeah, see how they react, and then I'll get a picture of where our players are and what they're all about. And the ones that come through it, you can go, yeah, I like him.
Right, lads, we've been talking for an hour, so I want to move it on a little bit. First of all, I'll get your predictions for tomorrow, and I'll come to you first, Dee.
I think we'd smash them 4-0.
Oh, yeah, I love this optimism at the moment, mate. You're brimming with it. I love it.
I just think we'll get space if they decide to play. Hollabass is out tomorrow as well. They're left full.
Okay.
So if we get whoever their fullbacks are, it'll be Yama on the right, Prodal and Mariappa play against Arsenal. And to be fair about Mariappa, he's not a Premiership centre half, in my opinion, from what I've seen of him. I just think they leave so much space between the fullbacks. The fullbacks just want to bomb on. And if they do try and do what they're doing against Arsenal, there'll be so many gaps for Salah and Mane that I just can't see anything else.
Good man. What about you, Al? What's your gut on tomorrow?
I think we'll win. If I'm going for 2-0, mate.
Should we be listening to you, though, after your day at the bookies today, mate?
Well, I'm back up now after John Ends and the 9 o'clock at Dundalk.
So you're off the hook.
You didn't give me that one till I asked you then.
No, you moan too much.
What about you, Dan? What's your prediction for tomorrow?
Tell me, mate.
What's your prediction for tomorrow, Dan?
Liverpool me tomorrow.
Yeah. So we got a full house. I'll go 2-0. I think it'll be similar to the Newcastle game. I think they'll keep it tight, not much space, but slowly but surely we'll find a gap and our man Mo will take it. Lads, I want to finish on one question that I want to ask you all, and we've kind of touched on sort of best players that we played with and things like that. I'm going to come to you first, Al, and I'm going to ask you, if you could replay one match in your career, what would it be and why? And then same question to you, Dan, and same question to you, Steve. I want to know a particular moment or game that you've played and why it stands out in the memory.
That's a tough one, though. Probably the... One of the most nerve-wracking games I've ever played in my career was when we played Reading at home with Notts Forest. We needed to beat them to clinch the league title because there was us and I think there was us and Middlesbrough. We were both going for it, and Sunderland started the season really poor. But then they went on the run about, I think they went on the run about 30 games unbeaten, and we got a big result to Birmingham away the week before, and we were playing Reading at home, and it was the most nerve-wracking game ever. And if Chris Bart-Williams scored at the about the 87th minute. But the tension of the game, I've never played in anything so intense in my career. It was really, one of them games where you're terrified to make a mistake, and the pressure was phenomenal. The relief of when he scored in the 89th minute was, it's always stuck with me.
I'd say that was some celebration on the way home.
Well, it was at Forest. Oh, was it? Yeah, it was. There was some party. I can tell you that. good drink cultures there.
what about you, Dan?
The game that sticks in my mind is one of the FA Cup finals that we won at Sligo. The first two we won on penalties. Kieran Kelly saved four penalties in each final, but the third final against Drogheda, where we won 3-2 late on in the game. I think that was brilliant, because we didn't play well that day, but we had a lot of fans there. It was my last game in Sligo, and I actually enjoyed the game, even though I had a nightmare, to be honest with you, because I just always thought I knew we were going to win. I think it was Eldon who scored in the last. They equalised in the last minute, and I think we scored in the 91st minute, Eldon, to win 3-2.
Wow, what a way to go out!
It was. And I played well. I went to Derry then and played the other game. I was going to say to you, this is my last game for Derry in the FA Cup final, which we lost to St Pat's. I've been out for 2 months with a knee injury, and I ended up playing a comeback to play in the final. I played fullback and made the mistake for their goal, actually. It hit the post, and I thought it was going to come back and hit me and go in, and I kind of hesitated, and it spun off the post and went in. But if I could go back and play a game, I'd go back to the Derry one so I could clear that ball off the line and see where we ended.
It's weird how those things stick in your mind, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you get on Twitter and everything nowadays, so no one lets you forget it, do they?
What about you, Steve? Any games that stick out in your memory, mate?
Yeah, there's loads, but I'm not going to compete with the fucking lads playing professional football, to be honest. There was a game for the school. The school I went to, we won all Ireland's, and how, like, Danny pretty now, like, schools football in Ireland is quite high level. Like, we played, at one stage, we had 8 Irish internationals playing with us on our team, like, and under 16, so decent enough, like. And we got to an All Ireland semi final. And got beaten on penalties. I'd scored twice and then missed a penalty. Scored twice. Scored in the 92nd minute to get it to... Scored 90th minute to get it to extra time. Scored last minute of extra time to get it to penalties and then missed a penalty.
Oh, you're joking. So you'd go back and stick it in the other corner?
I'd go back and not try and chip the key.
Oh, you're one of them? Oh, no, mate. Oh, no, what are you doing?
It wasn't my best, man.
Right, on that note, lads, I'm going to let you get back and enjoy the rest of your Friday night. I'll thank you all for your time. I look forward to hopefully having you again. It's been my pleasure. Hope you've all enjoyed it. Just a quick mention before we go to our sponsor. Thank you, Anne Janssen, for the support. They'll be our sponsor throughout the rest of this season. As I said before, if you want to reach out to Jan on Twitter, it's IPTV for all, and he'll be able to sort you out a good discount if you use LFCDT. Thanks all for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll be back next week with some more from the Tactics Board. Take it easy.
What's the recipe for surprising the kids, treating yourself, and ditching dish duty? Ordering your Pizza Hut faves like original pan, original stuffed crust, and more. Order now at PizzaHut.com. No one out-pizzas the Hut. Prices and participation vary.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Oh, that's a cheer we used to do in softball.
What? It's actually Geico.
Whenever someone hit a triple, we would wave our bats and yell, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more. But we never got to use it because we would only hit home runs. Annoying.
The phrase is from Geico because they help save people money.
Geico? Yeah, they were our team sponsor.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Sports Social Podcast Network.